Well, you've heard the stats. 60% of Australians are overweight or obese, and we're in the midst of a type 2 diabetes epidemic, and childhood obesity is a critical issue. On one side of the argument are those who say this is simply a matter of willpower. It can be solved by choosing to eat less. On the other side are those who say this is a very complex epidemic and needs to be approached much the same way smoking was 20 years ago, through regulation and legislation. Top of the list for action is a tax or a levy on sugary drinks. And this prospect is being explored in detail on the Health Report tonight by Norman Swan. Hello, Norman.
Hi, Fran.
Before we get to the sugary drinks tax, what's the actual science behind whether the obesity epidemic is simply a matter of willpower or something else?
Well, you know, the simplistic view is, well, nobody was fat in Belsen.
That's right.
So it's true that what you put in your mouth is, you know, goes on your hips and your tummy and so on. But it's how you get to that situation. And it is complicated. We've grown up, we've built suburbs, you know, Southeast Queensland's the poster child for this. You have cul-de-sacs far away from shopping. You can't walk anywhere. You've got to actually take the car. And there's been globalization of the food industry since the 50s. And the obesity epidemic probably dates back to around about the 50s. It's the explosion of fast food. You know, obesity in Australia is at its height in proportion to the density of fast food outlets, which is also related to people's income, education level, and so on. And it's a postcode phenomenon. So we are exposed to unhealthy foods. The cheapest options are unhealthy calories. And so all these things about marketing, globalization of food, cheap calories, lack of exercise, badly designed cities come together to create the obesity epidemic.
And once that's created, is it then genetically passed on?
Is
there a hormonal thing that goes on?
So two things. The genetic one's really interesting, but let's start with the hormonal one. Joe Proietta in Melbourne at Monash has shown that if once you are obese in adolescence, the appetite and satiety hormones in your brain are reset, and it's very hard to set them back to normal again. So once it's there in childhood and adolescence, that's why everybody bangs on about childhood obesity. Mm. Once it's there, you are not, it's not quite destiny, but it's almost destiny, destined to be an obese adult. And one in four children in Australia are obese or overweight. So that's one thing. Genetics is really interesting. It's not so much genetic, it is genetic change. It's called epigenetics, where the environment in which you grow up with changes the way your genes work. And it could well be that you are transmitting risk from mother to child. And there's some evidence that mothers who are obese do transmit extra risk to their children. So this is what goes on.
Okay, let's go to the sugar tax, sugary drinks, sugar taxes. Where in the world has them and do they work?
There's about 18 jurisdictions in the world where sugary drinks tax or sugar tax of some kind has been put in place. In Britain, they've tried to adjust it so that they create incentives for industry to move towards healthier foods. In Mexico, it's been a 10% tax on sugary drinks. And it affects the most vulnerable in the community who are the most price sensitive. So when you put up the price, what happens here, which is exactly what happens with tobacco, consumption goes down. So a 10% tax in Mexico has got a 7.5% reduction in consumption.
But it's where that consumption goes down, isn't it? Because people look at smokers and say, yeah, but it's the people at the higher education, higher income levels who are giving up the smoking, and those who are most disadvantaged in those socioeconomic ways keep smoking.
No, it actually goes the... But people in the higher economic, socioeconomic groups give up smoking because they are more able to. Their lives allow them to actually quit the habit more easily. It's the poor who have lots of things going on in their lives who find it hardest. And that's where the price hike works best. And of course, the people who oppose this say, oh, well, you're victimizing the poor. But it's the poor who are suffering and dying prematurely because of this. So the price hike actually disproportionately does affect the poor and disadvantaged more.
Okay. In Australia, is there a sense of how a sugar tax might work?
20% tax. You'd expect about a 16% reduction in consumption. And then you've got to decide what you do with that money. And the money should probably be ploughed back into obesity reduction and maybe some help for sugarcane farmers.
For sugarcane farmers? Why?
Well,
Barnaby Joyce,
as soon as you talk about sugar tax, he's going to, you know, we had a political crisis a couple of weeks ago because of sugarcane farmers. Only 20% of our sugar crop goes to the domestic market. So this would not be a disaster for sugarcane farmers. And you could use the revenue from the levy to actually help sugarcane farmers, either through compensation or encouraging them to plant other crops.
Okay. But is there a sense that if you the tax on sugar, is it a tax all out on sugar or just on sugary drinks?
Just in sugary drinks, but the industry is right that this is the thin end of the wedge. You would actually adjust things accordingly to actually encourage industry to use less sugar in products as time goes on.
Okay, well, you go to air this, like, tonight, and then we'll get see what the response from the food industry is. That's and right, the cane growers.
Sit back and turn off my email.
Norman, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Norman Swan. And you can hear more about this, the sugar epidemic, and how to deal with it on the Health Report this afternoon at 5:30 right here on RN.